You all came here this morning by car. A lot of people feel that after listening to the Bhagavad Gita, the words of the Lord, suddenly our mode of transportation will become a golden chariot, and we'll be having wings on our shoulders, and we'll become angels and fly out of here. That's not going to happen. We came by car, and we will leave by car. It's not suddenly going to make us very divine beings. If that is the case, then why are we studying the Bhagavad Gita? What is the benefit of coming every Sunday? What Swami Chinmayananda says when he talks about the Bhagavad Gita, he says that these verses have been given to you all or given to us. What is the purpose of these verses? Why is this knowledge being given to us? Is it just, you know, casting pearls before, you know, there's a saying, casting pearls before swine. Is that what it is? Because a pig, when he's given pearls and there is some usual food, is, you know, whatever, he obviously does not know the value of the pearls. He just ignores it and goes back to eating the dirt that he used to eat. So that should not be our situation. These Bhagavad Gita verses are like pearls. We should not just see them, okay, you know, I heard it on Sunday, and then from Monday to Saturday go back to the kind of things we were doing, back to our old routine. And then it would be, our condition would not be any different from, you know, what the example was given. It has to change the way we think. It has to change the way we work. It has to change the way we deal with people, how we deal with situations, how we deal with problems. The rishis, thousands of years ago, who gave us this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, were very practical people. They knew that not everybody is going to benefit from this knowledge. Maybe a very small percentage of the people will truly change, will truly benefit. But that did not discourage them. The rishis said that this knowledge we're just going to give to the world. In fact, most of the Upanishads and all these teachings don't even have the name of the author, who was the teacher, they're just given freely to the world. There was no copyright, no patent, not even authorship. They didn't need all that. They did it as a service to mankind, and they distributed this knowledge freely. Whether it benefits or not was not their immediate concern. It's like there is a rocky soil, and which is a mixture of rocky and soft mud, and you throw seeds. Now what will happen? Some of the seeds will land in very soft soil, where immediately it will take root and start growing, and the tree will come out and the beauty. But other places, the soil is very rocky, stones, and the seed is just sitting there and does not penetrate because the rock is so hard. So similarly, the rishis know that some of the people have a very soft mind where they are ready to accept this knowledge. Knowledge, they immediately accept it. But then there are others whose mind is so rigid, so firm, and so predetermined that the knowledge apparently is not taking root. But the rishis knew that these are eternal seeds. These are not seeds that will perish in a week or 15 days or a month. These eternal seeds, these thousands of years ago, this knowledge was given, is still as effective, as powerful as it was then. Just as Arjuna was influenced by that, so similarly, we have to make our mind soft, make our mind flexible to accept this knowledge. If we make our mind rigid, the rishi said, I don't worry about it. I just give the knowledge. And what will happen? Just as the rock eventually gets weak and breaks, so similarly, our mind, which at this moment is very closed, you know, what can they teach me? I already know everything. But what happens is that, how does our mind get soft? When we face problems, you face a problem, whether it's work or whether it's family or husband or wife or children or mother-in-law or neighbor, finances, you know, economy, the job. When these problems come, then you say, what can I do? How can I get out of this problem? And then you say, yes, the Bhagavad Gita has the answer to every problem. And that is true. Once you study the Bhagavad Gita, you realize that there is no problem in the world that cannot be solved by the study of this Bhagavad Gita. And that's why we have been doing it for the past so many years. And we are up to the 16th chapter. I think by the end of the year, I'll be able to finish 16th and most of the 17th. And then in a couple of years, the Gita will finish. But then we'll start the first chapter again, because a lot of you started new, and it's good for me also to revise that. So we'll continue the study of the Bhagavad Gita. This will always remain a Gita class, so people don't have to feel, oh, I'm at the 16th chapter, I missed all the 15. That's not going to happen. So that is the purpose of studying the Bhagavad Gita, that take it with an open mind, with a soft mind. That is, let the verses sink in you and take root. Because only then will your life change. Only then will your life flower. Because just as the tree, it flowers and gives beautiful flowers or sweet fruits to the world. So if we want to do that also, make our life sweet and flavorful, we have to absorb the message of the Bhagavad Gita. So here we are talking about the divine and devilish estates, about people who are divine, people who are very pure-hearted, compassionate, share with the world. And that we have studied right in the beginning. And then the last several weeks, we have been talking about people who do not practice divine values. What Krishna calls as asuras, those who know what is right, but do not practice it. So what happens to them? What is their fate? So we'll do that today in verse number 20. What happens to these people who, knowing the truth, yet do not practice it, do not apply it in their life? Verse number 20. Asurim yo nima panna. Murha janmani janmani. Mama prapyaiva kaunteya. Tato yantyadhamam gatim. So last week, Krishna said that these people who do not practice these values that we have mentioned in the first three verses and lead their life in a materialistic, selfish, self-centered way, I put them in yoni, asuri yoni, in the lower wombs. I means Krishna himself does not do it, as we had studied last week. It is our own karmas, it is our own actions that decide what kind of womb I will get in my next life, whether I'll be born in the house of yogis or whether I'll be born in the house of materialistic, selfish people, whether I'll be born in the house of very cruel people, child molesters, what kind of body, whether I will have a healthy body or somebody who is mentally or physically challenged. It is all determined by my own karmas. So here Krishna says, asurim yonim apanna. Entering into these wombs of asuric wombs, these wombs of families where the whole atmosphere is very selfish, very materialistic, very violent, very conflict-ridden, such homes. But what happens to these people, despite facing these problems, they do not change. They continue to think the way they have been thinking. They continue to act the way they have been acting. So he says, mudha, these foolish people, janmani, janmani, life after life, life after lifetime, because unless you change what you are doing, Swami Tejomaya Nandaji Guruji says it very beautifully, if you keep on doing what you have been doing, you will keep on getting what you have been getting. We cannot change our situation unless we change our actions, our way of thinking. So he says, life after lifetime, they keep on doing the same thing. And mam apraapyeva, he says, not reaching me. Here when Krishna says me, he does not only mean Krishna, but what he means is the total consciousness, Brahman, Self, the Lord. And that can be anybody, can be Shiva, can be Buddha, can be Mother Durga, can be Jesus. But not reaching the highest Self, the Lord who is within and without, not reaching. Reaching again does not mean that there is a place I have to go or a time, but not recognizing the divinity within themselves and the divinity within all. Tato yanti adhamam gatim. They reach the lowest of the lowest. So this is not a negative verse. You know, it sounds like very sad. You know, this person is you know, he's now condemned to a life of sorrow. Why? Because he did not improve himself, did not make any effort. And that is true. That is true. If you do not make any effort to improve, but we have been given a human intellect, we have been given a human mind, and we have been given this knowledge with the idea that I have to change, I have to improve myself. And there is a ladder of rise and a ladder of fall described very well in the Bhagavad Gita, and that is illustrated very beautifully in our scriptures by the seven worlds. You know, there are, we say there is earth, and there are seven heavens and six hells. I'll just enumerate them. He says, Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, Swahaloka, Maharloka, Jana, Tapa, and Satyam. So these are the seven. Satyam is the highest. So these are the seven heavens. And then the lower ones are Atala, Vitala, Nitala, Mahartala, and then Patal is the last one. And there is one, Nitala, Vipala, I think. No, one of them, but last is Patal. So there are six below and there are seven above. And heaven and hell are not physical locations. It's not like, okay, above earth, there are seven worlds and seven zones of, you know, where there is all this. In heaven, there's all these palaces and all this beautiful. And in hell, there is fire and suffering and all that is all described. But that is symbolic. What the Mahatmas say, that these seven worlds are seven mental states, seven states of the mind, and they are not actual locations. So the mind that is pure, that is involved in spirituality, slowly evolves to a higher and higher state of evolution. And the one that doesn't continues to suffer again and again and again. Swami Chinmay, can everybody read this board? So these seven worlds have been illustrated within our body as the seven chakras. There are seven chakras. Those of you who are familiar with the seven chakras, the seven yogic states of evolution. And physically, they are demonstrated as the sacral chakra, which is the root, which is the root chakra, which is at the bottom of the spinal cord. And there is the Swadhisthan, which is the pelvic zone, which is the zone of procreation. Manipur, which is the navel. Anahat, which is the heart. Vishuddhi, the throat. Agnya chakra, the forehead, the brow. Then the highest is the Sahasra chakra or the thousand petal chakra. So these represent states of evolution. The lowest chakras, the Mooladhara and the Swadhisthan. The Mooladhara is the zone of survival, where I work and earn and take care of my family, come home, work, earn, and then I die. Then a person who lives his whole life just taking care of himself, his family, his money, his property, is living in the lowest chakra of survival. He's living to survive. Okay, he's working, but, and it doesn't matter how big a house you have, how big a bank balance you have, how many, you know, cars you have, how many summer homes, winter homes, you are still at the level of the lowest chakra. You have not evolved. That is the Mooladhara. Then the upper one is the Swadhisthan. That is the zone of procreation. So which includes all the sense pleasures, you know, all the enjoyments and all. So those who live their life just to earn and just to enjoy, our rishis say you are living in the lowest two chakras, and that's all, and that's, you have not evolved. But there are others who say, no, 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 no. I want to be known, but I want to be known for good things. Not known like even these mass murderers, you know, the one who killed all the students in Oregon, you know. He's also, his name is known, but no. One who is known for good things, like Nelson Mandela or Martin Luther King or John F. Kennedy or Mahatma Gandhi. So people who are known for their good actions. So that is the Manipur chakra, the navel chakra, which relates to doing good deeds and making yourself known. Not for, you're not doing it to become famous. You do it out of an attitude of service, of helping the world. And in that process, you get fame and recognition, which is fine. But this individual is not working for fame or recognition. He or she is working for the betterment of mankind. Then slowly we evolve to the Anahat Chakra, the heart chakra. The heart chakra deals with love. So these people not only love themselves, their wife, their children, their family, but they love the whole of mankind. And even the idea that I'm serving anybody is not there. As a result of their love, there is a spontaneous outpouring of love for all mankind. And their service is not even a service. They don't even think I'm serving. They say out of love, out of compassion, it flows. And we can see it in the lives of people like Jesus or Mahatma Gandhi or Swami Chinmayananda, how with spontaneous outpouring of love, he gave us this beautiful knowledge, established this, you know, organization where so many of us are learning and benefiting. So that is an outpouring of love. So that is the Anahat Chakra, the heart chakra. Then above that comes the Vishuddhi or the throat chakra. People who live at the level of the throat chakra are speakers, writers. These are people like all these great rishis and all these great mahatmas, all these great teachers like Vivekananda and Raman Maharishi and Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda and Ved Vyas and all these people who wrote all these wonderful scriptures so that we may get inspired. So these are the inspirational people who guide others with their words. It could be speech or it could be writing or it could be through their actions, they inspire. And so through their words, through their actions, they inspire themselves and inspire others. Because the words they have got from where? They have got it from the scriptures. So that is how you can see how there's an evolution. These rishis have not mechanically just made the seven chakras out of, you know, just whims. It's a very systematic order of development of thought. It's very fascinating when the more you study about it. Most people, that when they talk about chakras, they talk about color and they talk about likes and dislikes. But these are zones of evolution. Then the sixth one, the brow or the forehead, is the zone of meditation. When we are in deep meditation, this chakra gets enlivened, gets energized, and that is a very, very high state of evolution. That's why Shiva is said to have three eyes. You know, and they said when the third eye opens, the whole world gets destroyed. The whole world, it's a very symbolic. Because the third eye, we all have. But in our case, the third eye is not visible. It's not open. Shiva has the third eye. He has the ability to open it. The third eye represents the eye of wisdom. The eye of wisdom. Wisdom is not knowing, you know, all the chemical formula of, you know, all the elements, not knowing all the computer programs, not knowing space. Knowledge that tells me who I am, knowledge that is spiritual, that takes me deep within to understand and experience this highest truth. So the brow, the forehead chakra, represents the eye of wisdom, and that is wisdom is the highest knowledge, not knowledge of physics, chemistry, mathematics, botany, science, but the knowledge of who I am, what is my true nature, why am I on this earth, what is this world, who created it, what was the purpose of creation, what is the purpose of my birth. So this understanding that who am I and why am I on this earth and what is the purpose of life and what is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, what is the essence of the Upanishads, that understanding when a person has, he said to have the eye of wisdom. And when that happens, when the eye of wisdom opens, just as Shiva's, when the eye opens, supposedly the whole world gets destroyed, that is symbolic. What it means is that when my eye of wisdom opens and I become one with Lord Shiva, then what happens is the world gets burnt. My ego gets burnt, and then I do not give any more reality to the world. I see the whole world as Bhagwan himself. I see the whole world becomes one. It becomes the Lord, it becomes Jesus, becomes Krishna, becomes Shiva, becomes Brahman. So the whole world disappears for a Mahatma, and everywhere he sees me alone, just as I am a manifestation of Shiva, so all of these are also. So for him or her, the world is nothing but I myself expressing as all of them. That's why Jesus said the Father and heaven and I are one, and he saw everybody as himself. And so that understanding, when it happens, they say that person's sixth chakra is open. The chakra of wisdom. And then the highest, of course, is the Sahasra chakra, the thousand petal, which in the seven worlds is called Satyam, and that is the state of realization. So a realized master always lives in that highest zone of understanding. So that is what we have to do with our life. Let us not only live our life in the lower chakras, let us slowly evolve to higher and higher states of understanding through service, through love of everybody, and through meditation, through practicing this knowledge, and through true understanding, ultimate, and through reading the scriptures. That's why we always recommend that if you don't have this Bhagavad Gita, please buy it, because Swami Chinmayananda's commentary is masterful, and everybody who comes should read it, because our studies are based on this commentary. And then, of course, I try to expand by getting teachings from other masters. So you can revise it at home, you can read it. And then, like I said, it's not only the end of the Gita, we will continue after 18 to the first chapter. So this book will last us for many years, at least 10, 15 more years. So it's worth getting it. Please do get it. So through study, through love, through service, I slowly evolve to ultimately the state of Buddhahood, the state of Nirvana, the state of Ramakrishna Paramhans and Mirabai and Mother Teresa. All these great souls, where the world they lived in, that is the world where I have to go. So that is the process. So that's what Krishna says, that you have been given a human life to evolve. But what happens to those who don't evolve? So it says they go downward. They go to the lower worlds. Even below the Vishnu, below the Mooladhara, they go to the zone of animals. They go to these hells. So I have this human birth, and if I don't take advantage, and if I live my life selfishly, you know, I don't even care for my family, I don't care for anybody, my life is very destructive and hateful and hostile and violent, and we find that is increasing in this world nowadays. We find more and more, so much violence and so much negativity and so much anger and all. Then what happens to such people? Krishna says, mam apraapyeva kaunteya, not reaching me, yanti adhamam gatim. They go to the status below humans. And what is that? Obviously, you become a dog or a cat or mouse, you know, or a buffalo or a cockroach. And think about it. Cockroaches, how is their life? Full of fear. They hide in places, and immediately you put on the light, they run away. So that becomes the life of such individuals, a life of fear, a life of animals. And once you go to that animal stage, the Mahatma say you cannot come back. It's very, 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 very rare. Most of the time, you will be again and again born an animal, because animals cannot do good deeds, right? Animal cannot get merits, cannot get punya or papa. He just has to fulfill his life. It may rarely happen. They describe in Puranas, there was some cow who was living in a rishi's ashram. And there she, you know, heard the highest knowledge and all. It may rarely happen. But generally, these people, once they go to the animal state there, so let us not waste our time. That is, I'm not trying to scare people, but let us take advantage of this knowledge. Let us evolve. Let us become better human beings. Serve the world, love the world, get the right knowledge, and through meditation, evolve. So the question is, who decides, you know, whether I evolve or do I go downward? Is there a Chitragupta? You know, they talk about in our scriptures, there is a Chitragupta who is writing all these, you know, all these good and bad deeds, and he keeps record. And then when you die, then you go in front of Bhagwan. And then he comes and says, you know, sir, this person did these good deeds and that's bad deeds. And or in Christianity, they talk about a day of judgment where the Lord will be sitting, and then, you know, and then you will appear before him. And there's no such thing. Bhagwan doesn't have time. He doesn't have time. He says there are billions of humans, and then there are billions of animals and birds and plants. And it's not only one lifetime. I have to judge all their lifetimes, because we have not only had one life, we have had thousands of lifetimes before we became human. So billions of people and thousands of lifetimes, who has time to keep track of all that? So what does he do? How does he keep track? He said it's very simple. He uses what's called a V-chip. He puts a V-chip in our brain. What is V-chip? V-chip is the vasanas. Just as there are, you know, Intel has a chip that they put in all computers. So we have a chip in our brain that automatically records, like the Intel chip. It records all the, you know, isn't it? All the activities. I'm not a computer expert, but it records everything that is happening. And the computer, even 10 years ago, you have entered some data, you press it and it immediately comes out. So we have a chip in our brain that we carry, and that we carry not only in this lifetime, but in multiple lifetimes, one lifetime after another. In our mind and intellect, there is a V-chip called vasanas, which keeps track of my good or bad actions. Krishna says, I don't have time to chase each and every one of you and worry what you're doing, what you're not doing. I put this chip in you, and you keep record of your own actions. And then based on your actions, you get good or bad existence. Whether you become an angel, or whether you become a cow, or whether you become a dog, that is up to you. It is based on your karmas. It is based on the knowledge that is implanted in your chip. And who does it? I do it. So if I have said this many times, but if I am suffering today, it is because of my actions in the past. If I am happy today, it is because of my good actions. And I cannot erase the memory in this chip, right? I cannot erase it. What I have done in last life or 10 lifetimes ago, I cannot go back and change it. Somebody was asking, can we go in the past 200 years? You can't. All I can do is the new data that I am implanting in the chip should be positive. Let me at least fill my chip with good data so that my future will be good. Because based on my past, I am suffering the present, or I am enjoying. So if I put good data in my present, if I do good deeds, if I help the world, if I love the world, if I serve the world, then my future will be automatically guaranteed. So it is up to me what kind of data, because in the computer they say, garbage in, garbage out. That's a very famous line, that what kind of data you put in the computer, those are the kind of results you will get. So you have the choice in your own computer, in the brain, what kind of data you put, that kind of results you will get. So that is what he's saying, that those who reach me, who come close to me, are living in the highest chakras, and they evolve, and then their they become realized, they become one with me, and then they do not have to take another birth. Or if they do, if these great Mahatmas do, it is because Swami Tejomayanandaji says it very beautifully. He says, God will come. Some saint, he's been, you've been sitting here for 2,000 years, do nothing. Come on, go to the earth. You need to wake up my children. So he will send this Mahatma, you know, and he will be take a womb, in a mother's womb, and he will take birth. Why? His purpose is to waken the world. So these realized masters from time to time may come to wake us up, but their purpose of life is served. They say whatever they had to do, they have done. Krita Krityascha Bharata, in the 15th chapter, he says, one who becomes one with me has accomplished his purpose. There is nothing more for him to accomplish. Then he stays with me. He becomes one with me. So that is the essence of this 20th verse, that we can evolve if we resolve. Any questions, any comments? Yes.
You give the example of Swami Chidmayananda as one whose Anahata was awakened and Vishuddhi was also awakened.
Yes.
So a very awakened soul could have simultaneously,
yes,
the Muladhar as well as the Sahasra.
What we believe, he was realized. He was already living in the Sahasra Chakra, in the Agnya Chakra, but he used his abilities of speech and love to help others. Like different Mahatmas act differently. Like Vivekananda, Swami Chinmayananda were wonderful speakers. So they could speak and influence the world. Mirabai, she influenced the world by her songs. She has so much love. So what happens is that they are all already evolved masters. But depending on their abilities, like her Anahat Chakra was very powerful. She had so much love for Krishna. So her verses are, or look at Tukaram, his teachings are so powerful, so much Vedanta, you know, in his teachings. Again, through love of Vitthala, you know, this teaching spread. And then there may be other people who serve the world, you know, who work for the benefit of the world. So they may do different things depending on their tendencies. There are some Mahatmas who are just sitting in the Himalayas or in the monasteries meditating. They don't even come out. And you might say, oh, he's wasting his life. They don't go anywhere. They just stay there. They maybe get up, maybe have some food, and then they go back to the deep meditation. But through their energy, through their vibrations, they are influencing the world. They don't need to go anywhere. Their energy is so powerful that they can influence the world, not only alive, but even death. After, like Raman Maharishi, he was a great soul. He never went anywhere. He said, I'm here. And he stayed in one temple for the rest of his years. But so much influence people had. Thousands of people used to come by, just walk by him, and they would be inspired by him. So they do different actions, but they are all living in that Sahasra zone.
So in this example, then there could be some saints who also live in the Grihastha ashram. They could have a family. So in other words,
yes,
Muladhar and Swadhisthan may be
right
for them, and yet they are in the ultimate state.
True, like Tukaram, he was a householder. In fact, he, as a householder, was very unsuccessful. You know, his wife was very unhappy, his children, because he was not interested in the household, but he was married. But you know, his teachings, even so several hundred years after, he actually composed several thousand of these abhangas. So yeah, he had to fulfill his duty. Ramakrishna Paramhans was married, but he treated his wife as the goddess. Actually, he never touched her. The moment he married her, he said, Mother Durga has come in my house. So he worshipped his wife as mother goddess. He never actually physically had any contact with her. So yeah, they may live a life of, and you know, like Janak Maharaj. Janak Maharaj was a king, right? He was living in a palace, enjoying sleeping on silk clothes, eating the best food, but he was a realized master. And he spent his life in administration. You know, his city, his country was very well run. He was a very, very compassionate king, very loving, like a father. So he did not give up his kingdom and say, I'm going to go to the forest. Wherever I am. In fact, He was such a great that Mahatmas used to come to learn from him. In fact, great Mahatmas were sent that you need to go sit in Janak's court and learn from Janak Maharaj. So he was functioning as a king, you might say, at the lowest level of existence, but his mind was in the Sahasra. In fact, when we see Swami Ishwarananda Ji, he's coming from this Tuesday to Friday, and he's going to talk about Ashtavakra Gita, which is a conversation between Janak Maharaj and his guru. And when you listen to Janak, of course the guru was a great soul, Ashtavakra, but when you listen to Janak, you realize he's not any less. Through the contact with his guru, he has evolved. So yes, they may function differently based on their vasanas. But that's a very good question. Thank you.
Which gives us hope.
Yeah, as a householder, if you do your duties well, actually there is a long story. Maybe sometime if we have time, I can tell about this Mahatma who burnt the bird. Does everybody know that story? I can tell that story, but then we won't have time to do another verse. But I'll tell that story. Yes.
Is there any chakra or point if you reach there, there is no coming back to your...
The Sahasra, the highest. Yad Gatvana, 15th chapter, Sri Krishna says, Yad Gatvana Nivartante, Tad Dham Paramam Mama. Once you reach him, then there is no coming back. But as you evolve, your knowledge becomes stronger and stronger, and your chances of falling back are less. Swami Chinmayananda says, he says, I consider spirituality as a one-way street. There's only entry. You can't get out. Once you truly get involved and start enjoying this knowledge, there is no coming back because there is nothing equal to this. No novels, no TV shows, no movies. Nothing can equal this, the Bhagavad Gita. Once we have understood and studied it, it just grips you in this way. But anything else?
A diabolical person becomes an animal. So I don't see an animal doesn't have the consciousness.
Yes.
So
he just continues to live his life without, they're not able to do good or bad deeds. They just continue to fulfill their lives and they're born again and again. And rarely they may evolve, otherwise, it's their own karmas.
They don't have a chance of going back, very rare
it can happen.
But if they don't have the knowledge, they don't have...
Yeah, so then they just continue to be born and die, because they have condemned themselves to that existence.
So there's no really suffering from the person?
Yeah, right? Not from an animal, because animal does not know, like a plant has no suffering, they don't know any better, they just continue to live their existence. Okay, there is this long story about this rishi who burnt the bird. You are asking about householder. So if most of you have not heard, it's a very good story. I may not have time to do one more verse, but that's okay. We are not in a hurry. We have whole lifetime to evolve. And more lifetimes. But no, really, there is an urgency. The urgency is there, that is, human life is very precious. Do not waste it. What is the guarantee that next life I'll be born a human? I might be born as a cockroach or a dog or a cat or a buffalo or who knows? And it is, once you have this knowledge, then the Upanishad says that having this knowledge, if you don't practice, it is a big waste. It is tragedy. That's exactly what the Upanishad says. It is a tragedy not to practice after having got it. So anyway, this story is a very wonderful story. Some of you may have heard it. But there was this Mahatma who was meditating under a tree, this sadhu. And he was meditating and it was early morning and he was in deep meditation. And so it happened that one of the birds sitting on the tree dropped something on him. And as birds do, early morning the bird had just eaten, so fall fell on it, on the Mahatma. Now he got very angry. I am a great Mahatma sitting in deep meditation and this bird is droppings on me. He got angry and he looked at the bird in anger and the bird burned to death. The bird actually caught fire. This much yogic power he had. He had done so much meditation and the bird caught fire and fell to the ground because of his anger. So little ego came, see what a great yogi I am. I looked with anger at this bird and the bird just burned to death. That is my power. You know, I have been doing it. You think I have been wasting my time? So little now ego started coming in his mind that how great a yogi I am. Anyway, so he washed his hair and all, went to the river, washed his hair. Then it was time for him to get bhiksha. You know, these sadhus, they don't have a home, so they go to the householders' homes and they beg for, they call it bhiksham dehi. They go and say bhiksham dehi. So they go and beg, and it's the householder's duty to support these mahatmas. That is part of our grihastha ashram, that we have to take care of these sadhus and mahatmas. That is part of our duty. Not only we have to take care of our children, our old parents, but we have to take care of sadhus, and we have to take care of the whole creation. That means help, you know, grow, plant trees, take care of animals, birds, take care of the earth. So that is also part of householder's duty. So this sadhu goes to this lady's house and he knocks on the door. So she says, who is it? You know, kaun hai in Hindi. So she says, I am sadhu, bhiksham dehi, bhiksham dehi. So she understands that there is a Mahatma standing outside. He says, Mahatma ji, I'll be there in a minute. Please, you know, I'll be there in a minute. He says, okay. So he waits and 2 minutes pass and 5 minutes pass. And she was a little busy. She was trying to get her children ready for school and a lunch, breakfast and lunch for her husband. She was really tied up. So then he gets angry, you know, and he just looks with anger and anger. And he gets angry that I am this great Mahatma. I could burn this bird. And look at, she's insulting me, making me wait outside her house for 5-10 minutes. So the voice comes from inside. Mahatma ji, I am not that bird that will get burnt by your anger. How did she know? Nobody else knows. It just happened 15 minutes ago. How does she know that I burnt this bird? He gets shocked. He says, you know, I never told anybody. So then she comes out and she touches his feet and apologizes. You know, she says, I'm so sorry, but I was getting my children ready and I was getting my husband ready and, you know, making his lunch. I'm sorry I had to make you wait. I apologize. She touches his feet and gives him bhiksha. He says, okay, bhiksha, I'm not interested now anymore. I want to know, how did you know about that bird? How did you know about my bird? She says, no, I know. How can you know? You must be a greater yogi than even I am. You know, I thought I was a great yogi sitting in meditation. And you are sitting in this house and a householder. How could you know that? It's okay, Mahatmaji. So he says, no. Tell me, how many hours do you meditate? And how much Gita have you studied? And how many Upanishads have you read? He says, Mahatmaji, I am ignorant. I have not studied any Gita. I have not read any Upanishads. I don't even meditate. So she said, what do you do? She says, whole day I think of God. When I'm cooking for my children, I think of God. When I'm taking care of my husband, I think of God. When I'm, you know, cleaning my house, I think of God. I do everything as his service. And constantly, morning to night, ultimately, who has given me the ability? God has. Who has given me these children? God has. Who has given me this husband? God has. So God is there in all of them. So I don't need to go to the temple. I don't need to read Gita. Does not mean that one shouldn't read. But for her, she said, I am ignorant. I don't have time. So he says, no. You could, just by taking care of husband and wife and all, nobody can become realized. I know so many householders. They're not like you. You must have a guru. You must have a guru. She says, yeah, that is true. I have a guru. He says, see, now I know. It is your guru who has given you this power. Who is this guru? So she says, his name is, you know, Ram Singh or something like that. So really? Where does he live? He says he lives in the next village. And he is my guru. He has taught me. He has inspired me. So this Mahatma says, I now need to go find this guru. Because he must be even a greater yogi than her if he is the guru. So he goes there and he starts asking. He asks, is there any Mahatma Ram Singh ji, you know, great saint living in this village? They said, no. There is nobody like that. Is there any great yogi, you know, who meditates many? No, there is nobody like that. Whom are you looking for? He says, name is Ram Singh ji. He's a great yogi. He said, Ram Singh? He said, yeah. He said, oh, he's a butcher and he lives down the street in that next house, fourth house from here. Butcher? Yeah, he chops meat, you know, that's what he does. That is his job. Said, come on, come on. No. A great yogi cannot be a butcher, you know, chopping meat. No, that's not correct. Is there any other Ram Singh in this village? This guy says, I'm a sarpanch. I'm the head panch of this village. I know everybody because they all vote for me in my election time. And there is only one Ram Singh. He lives in that fourth house. He's a butcher. You want to go meet him? Go and meet him. So he says, well, okay, that's the only one. So he goes and he knocks on the door and he opens, and this Ram Singh opens the door. He says, oh, that lady from the next village sent you. So he said, how did you know? In those days, they didn't have phone. She couldn't have called him and told him, I'm sending this guy, you know. How did you know about this? He says, yeah, I also know about your bird. So now he's shocked. You know about my bird and you know that lady sent me? So he says, yeah, I know all that. So how do you know? He said, I just know it. It comes to me from, you know, I just comes to me. So he says, no. You must be a great yogi. You know, you again, he asks him, how many hours do you meditate every day? So I don't have time to meditate. I'm a butcher. Didn't they tell you that? He says, yeah, but, you know, have you read again the Gita? Have you read the Upanishads? Do you chant the Vishnu Sahasra Nama? He says, I don't do anything. So he says, then what do you do all day? He says, look, I am single. My parents are old. They are handicapped. They are, you know, they're not able to take care of themselves. And what I do is I take care of them from morning to night. Either I'm chopping meat and I'm selling it. And when I sell the meat, I'm very honest. I do not cheat my customers. If they order a kilo, I give them a kilo. If they order 2 pounds, whatever they pay for, I give them the right amount. I don't cheat anybody. I'm very honest. And whatever spare time I have, I take care of my parents because they are both bedridden. They need a lot of help. I change them. I clean them. I bathe them. That's all I do. I'm not a yogi. I'm not a Mahatma. I'm not anybody. I think you made some mistake. You know, if you're looking for some teachings, I can't give you. So the point of this story is that if a person does his duty, constantly remembering the Lord, serving the Lord, doing his best, doing an honest labor and helping others and doing it as a service, so again, the point of this story is not that one should not read the Bhagavad Gita or one should not meditate or one should not read the Upanishad. But the answer to your question is that there is hope for all of us. Let us, and the way I believe it is that, you know, do whatever you can on the spiritual path. I have told this before, but I'll repeat it. It's my very favorite description. They say in Vishnu Sahasranama, I think in the 82nd verse, Vishnu's name is Durga. Durga means fort. I think those of you have heard it, please forgive me, but I really enjoy talking about it. And so Durga means fort. So they say, how can God be called a fort? What kind of name is that? You know, you hear of God as all-powerful, all-loving, all-compassionate, all-knowing, Sarva-Shaktimans, you know, all that. But calling him a fort, what kind of name is that? You know, Durga, you're calling Vishnu Durga. So Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary, actually that book is available in the office. Those of you who chant the Vishnu Sahasranam must buy that book because each name is so beautifully explained by Swami Chinmayananda. Sure, very powerfully each name he has explained it, you know, about one or two paragraphs. I actually read that and so my favorite name is Durga for Vishnu. Because they say like a Durga is a fort, right? Now in the olden days when there was a fort and you had to capture it and the fort had all these stone walls and the gates were closed, it was made of steel and stone and rock. And if you wanted to capture the fort, you couldn't attack it or break it. They didn't have missiles or bombs, or at the most they had bows and arrows and, you know, spears and maybe little fire and all, but that's about it. So what they used to do was, if they had a big army, they would surround the fort from all sides. And once they surrounded the fort, the people inside couldn't go out. They couldn't get more supplies. They couldn't get more weapons. they couldn't get ammunition, they couldn't get artillery, they couldn't get food. And so by surrounding the fort, the people outside couldn't escape and nobody from, I mean, the people inside couldn't escape and nobody from outside could come and help. And so these people ultimately were captured and then the fort was taken over. So they say Bhagavan is like a fort. What you do, you surround him from all sides so he can't escape. So you do karma yoga, you do service, and one wall you do karma yoga, other side you do bhakti. Third side you do jnana, knowledge, and fourth side you do meditation. So all the four gates are surrounded, so where can he go? Vishnu is caught. So if you want to catch him, use all the means, just as these people, they used all their weapons so that the people in the fort couldn't escape. So you surround God from all sides. You do karma yoga, you do service, you do bhakti, path of love, you study, you path of knowledge, meditation, hatha yoga. Whatever it takes, as long as my path is clear that I have to catch Bhagavan, I make sure he doesn't escape. Escape means he's in our heart, he cannot escape, but by constantly working for him, thinking about him, he becomes your captive, he becomes your friend, he becomes your, you know, buddy, he becomes your beloved. And that's what all these great Mahatmas did. You know, Mirabai said, I'm married to Krishna, I don't care my husband, my father-in-law, whoever says anything, I mere to Giridhar Gopal, dusra na koi. Tukaram, look at Sant Gyaneshwar, look at Narsi Mehta, how they lived their life, so many problems they had, so much Jesus, how many problems the world gave them. But they were firm that I have to reach my father, I have to reach my beloved, I have to become one with him. And so you just surround him. And so where will he escape? If he tries to escape path of karma, you catch him by bhakti, or you catch him by jnana, or you catch him by meditation, catch him by knowledge, catch him by serving saints, you know, mahatmas. If you serve them, that gives you so much punya. So that is the point of this verse, that we can all evolve if we do our duty, love the world, serve. And some amount of service is necessary. Some amount of giving back to society is a must. One must do that because society has given us so much that we have to share, we have to give, and then only we will evolve. Otherwise, we are condemned to multiple births. A lot of people, if you have done equal good and bad, you have neither too good nor too bad, then you will be born again as a human. Maybe slightly better human, slightly worse human, but you will keep going back and forth. So, janmani, janmani, let us not do that. Let us evolve. So, that is the essence of this verse. Any comments, any more, any questions?
Yeah, I think the meaning of this is evolving. It doesn't mean that if you have evolved up to the naval level, then you will be gone from the sacred or pelvic level, and then when you evolve to hard, it doesn't mean that you are losing all the below level. You're still in those levels and you are evolving.
Yes,
level.
True.
So that's what I think it means.
True.
So if a person who is evolved, like crown level, doesn't mean that he's not going to, you know,
function
those all the other levels.
True.
He has to have all these levels to reach to the crown level.
Yes, yes. You continue to work, yes. Yeah, sorry. What were you saying? What more? So what?
So I was saying that, like he said, that person who has to reach to the highest level, they cannot, be grahastha people, right? So it doesn't mean that if you have to evolve to the next level, you will lose the below levels. You can still be in grahastha level and then evolve to the next level, part, and then,
true.
And ultimately to the realized
part. Right. Because you keep on doing your duties, but do it as a service of God with love. But also one has to be very careful that you may have evolved, say, to Manipur. Yeah. And then if your actions are not pure, then you can fall back down. Like in a lot of great, you know, leaders like presidents and, you know, senators and all, they are serving the world, doing so much good, and then they get caught with some, you know, some scandal or some, and then they come back to the, they have devolved back to the Swadhisthan or the, you know, the Mooladhara Chakra. So the point is that one has to be very alert. That's why Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda says, alert, live an alert life, awake, alert, and vigilant. The three words he uses, Swami Chinmayananda, awake, alert, and vigilant. That means you are awake to the truth. You make sure, you know, you're alert, that you don't fall back, and vigilant, you keep evolving. So keep growing and make sure that you don't get in caught up. Or some politicians, they become crooked, you know, they start cheating and robbing the world and, you know, and just filling their own pocket and become corrupt. Then again, they are coming back to the, even below the Swadhisthan, they're going below into the animal worlds. They have been appointed to be the head of the country or the senator or the congressman. And if they live their life as, and people say it's okay, you know, everybody's corrupt, especially in India, we have so much corruption. These leaders themselves, you know, do so much. But the karmas will catch them. Like I was hearing about one, you know, chief minister of a particular state. He was corrupt as can be, stole so much money. And what I heard is that his wife has tongue cancer and she is suffering so much. She had to have a big surgery. She's in so much pain. She can't even eat. She can't even talk. And she's in constant discomfort. Her whole jaw and mouth was taken out and she's, you know, looks horrible. And what's the use? You know, he has crores of rupees, but he can't enjoy it. His wife is, and his son is an alcoholic. The son drinks morning to night and he'll probably die in a year or two. That, the guy is very rich, but what is he going to do with his money? He's so miserable. His wife is suffering. His son is, you know, a total failure, total disappointment, his only child. So the point is that the law of karma catches everybody. Nobody can escape. He may think, you know, and people may think, oh, wow, look at this guy. He is living in a big house, has a lot of money, but it's no use. So you are elected or appointed to a post to serve the people. If you start plundering the state or the country, then that's going to be your condition. So you can evolve and then come back down too. Only way you don't come back down is when you go to Sahasra. When you have evolved to that level where you become one with him, then Sri Krishna says, Yad gatva na nivartante tad dham paramam mama. That is my abode, where once somebody reaches me, becomes one with me, then he never goes back down. So there is an up and down movement. It's not all is not only upward. It could be up and down. So one has to be very vigilant, very alert.
So how the one will know that we have, so he or she is at which level and which how you judge that you are in that?
You will know because. Like somebody asks Swami Chidananda, he's one of the Swamis. He says, how do I know that I'm evolving spiritually? He said, things that used to bother you before don't bother you anymore. That means you are evolving. It means first we used to get irritated and upset by somebody and now you say it's okay. You know, so when you will know when your heart is pure, when you are serving the world, you are helping. It doesn't matter. You may be vacuuming the floor or doing the dishes, but if you say it's Krishna's work I'm doing, you are one with him. So what happens is that slowly, slowly your mind becomes more peaceful. See, if I am more peaceful today than I was last year, if I feel closer to God than I was last year, then I'm evolving. So what one has to do is take constant stock. Okay, at the end of this year, have I gotten closer to Krishna than I was last year? And only you will know that. Your husband will not know, your children will not know, your friends will not know. You will know. So that's how I try to judge myself. You can do it once a year, you can do it once a month, you can do it every day. Did I do anything today, before you go to bed, did I do anything today to bring myself closer to the Lord? Did I help the world to get better? You know, that's what they say, leave the world a better place than when you found it. So did I help these people to get better? Did I share my love with somebody who was suffering? So as you serve the world, as you share your love, automatically you will evolve to those higher chakras. You don't need a Mahatma or a scholar to come and you will know yourself. Am I more loving? Am I more compassionate? Am I more sharing? If I am more sharing, then I am in the Manipur chakra. If I am more loving and compassionate, I am in Anahat chakra. If I am in helping others and inspiring them, then I am in the Vishuddhi chakra. So you will know. You will know. It is something for each one of us. It's not for me to look at it and say, you know what, my husband, no hope for him. You know, that's what most people think. I think he's down, maybe worse than Mooladhar. But that doesn't matter. It's not to judge my husband or my wife or my neighbor. It is for myself. That is the whole idea. Yeah.
Okay, you mentioned about the person, the politician, his wife has cancer.
Right.
Okay, so in his karma then, you suggest that his wife got cancer because of his...
Because she's part of it. She must have done her own karmas too. But then, see, you share in a way. You share. She must have had some karmas, and then he did evil karmas. She probably encouraged him, didn't discourage him from doing it. She probably supported him, knew the money was coming illegally. She enjoyed the money, built a big house, and so she was a part of that. But what I'm saying is, we don't know. See, we are all connected, you know, in the family. That's why they say a family is a place. Actually, next week we'll talk about what is wife and what is son. I had brought it here, who is wife and child, but we didn't have time to do that. So we'll do it next week. But these relationships are to grow spiritually. A family is together so that we may all grow spiritually. That is the whole purpose of a family. And so the choice is, does the family evolve or the family goes down? And they say that if truly a great saint comes, you know, in this Vaishnav Janto, the last line says, he says, one who meets such a person, kul ekotar tariyare. He says, one who gives a family, who gives birth to a realized master, 71 generations of them have been purified. So the point is that a family evolves and devolves together. If a great Mahatma is born, the family must have done, parents must have done a lot of good karmas to have a Gyaneshwar or have a Tukaram or have a Narsim Mehta or somebody to be born in your house, to be born to such parents. Like think about Krishna's parents, you know, Devaki and Vasudev. What kind of karmas they must have done to give birth to Krishna or Ram or... you know, Jesus, you know, that's why Mother Mary is worshipped, because through her, you know, such a great soul came on this earth. So we share the good and bad karmas both as a family. But that's a very good question. Thank you. Good point. Thank you. Hari Om. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramaya. Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Makasche Tukhabhava. Om Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru. So the next 2 weeks we'll talk about how to get out. Very practical, as it I says here, how to get out. How to get out of this cycle of karma, what is inhibiting us. And how we can get out, so we'll be talking about that the next week. The next 2 verses tell us the escape. Thank you so much.